So my name is Mark Carmen. You probably don't know me.
I'm Adam Hogue. We do the post-game show on WGN Radio. And, of course, you guys know these guys. Daryl Boston's here, Michael Kopech, Zach Collins. All former first-round picks, which is the theme of this panel here. And, of course, we'll take questions from the audience at any point. But I guess we should just open it up with you guys right now. First of all, how's the whole weekend going?
Hello. Yeah, this is an awesome week. Other than the freezing weather that everybody had to bear to get here, it's awesome.
Who's the most nervous right now to be up here?
You see my leg?
Yeah, I was noticing. That's why I asked.
I'm pretty nervous.
Are you getting recognized, Zach Collins? Are you walking around? Do people know who you are yet? They are going to know it someday.
Yeah, I was just interviewing someone as like a fake NBC guy, you know. I was Steele Davis from NBC. And I'm like, hey, how you doing, sir? I'm Steele Davis from NBC. And he looks at me and he goes, I know you're Zach Collins. You don't have to lie to me. And I'm like, all right, cool. This interview's over.
This is a hard crowd to fool because these are all the hardcore fans that know who you guys all are. You had to get somebody, though.
Yeah, I got a couple people.
Oh, I'm sure. Let's just start with, since the theme is first-rounders, you guys got any stories? Maybe go all the way back to you, Daryl, for getting drafted in the first round.
I'm not sure why I'm up here. That was like 40 years ago.
But that's the theme of this.
Seventh overall, 1981. Come on.
Yeah. That's worth about $7 million right now. I got $60,000 back then.
How was the draft different back then compared to what it is now?
Back then, you basically just got a call, a phone call, or a telegram, or something like that. But now it's a whole event that you know, the guys get to go to New York or New Jersey to the MLB network, and it's a big deal now.
Michael Kopech, would you have preferred, if you could go back in time, just have been drafted by the White Sox originally, never mind the whole Red Sox thing, and just come straight to Chicago?
I mean, of course I would have, because I love Chicago. But, you know, you make experiences throughout your minor league career, and a big part of that for me was the Red Sox, and I'm sure that no White Sox fan would give up having Sale. So I'm glad to have been a part of that in hindsight.
Is it different for all you guys when you start your career as a first-round draft pick? You walk in that clubhouse and everybody else is coming. Oh, there he is. Like, do you feel that pressure walking in? That's for anyone.
I kind of did a little bit. First place I went was AZL, which is a rookie league, and I was with a bunch of 16, 17-year-old guys, international guys, and they're all kind of like looking at you like as if you're like some superhuman when I'm probably not as good as half of them in the clubhouse. But you got to watch every move you make, and obviously people mess with you a little bit more about your draft status. So it was cool, though.
How big of an adjustment is it going from the notoriety and the publicity of getting drafted in the first round? That's always the pick that gets the most attention. And then you guys got to go into the minor leagues for a while before you, and that's a whole different journey, and all of a sudden all that same attention isn't quite there.
I mean, I was fortunate enough to play like a week in AZL, and then I went straight to Winston-Salem, which Winston-Salem, for anybody that hasn't been there, it's one of the nicest high-A ballparks in the country. So I didn't really have to go through the Montana, Iowa's, you know, those kind of places. But so I was fortunate in that way. But it was still a lot of fun, still a lot of learning. And, can't wait to get to the big leagues.
Yeah, but you were a Miami guy. Like, I mean, that's the U.
Yeah, I mean, I went from private jets and just a lot of glam to Winston-Salem.
You know? You don't get the same love, though, as the football guys, right?
No, not the same. I mean, maybe now. They're horrible.
Michael, what was I just remember you coming in the clubhouse for the first time last year, and I'm pretty sure you sort of had this glow over you. I mean, I was looking, it's like, there he is. And then you're about to go out there and pitch in the major leagues. Just rewinding back to that, being in that club, so were guys kind of, it seemed like guys were almost staying away from you the day that it was happening.
Yeah, I think for the most part, nobody wanted to make me any more nervous than I probably already seemed walking in there, because I think my legs were about to shake out from underneath me when I walked in. But yeah, it was an unbelievable experience. I walked into the clubhouse and I'm trying not to get too amped up because the game's not for four more hours and I'm sitting there like this, ready to go. But yeah, no, it was awesome. And then, of course, once I got settled in, everybody was very welcoming and it was cool.
How many people in this room were at Michael Kopech's debut last year?
Yeah.
I had a feeling.
It rained.
Yes. And that part was not fun. We talked about this last night, Michael, on the radio, just the atmosphere that night at the ballpark. Daryl, would you agree that that was maybe the most electric night of the whole season? Because it seemed that way to us, those of us that are there most of the games throughout the season.
Yeah, the stadium was on fire that day. You know, as soon as he walked into the clubhouse, you could feel the energy within the clubhouse. And the moment we stepped outside into the dugouts, man, the stadium was electric. It was awesome.
So, Zach, what was the vibe in the minor leagues at the time? Were you guys all paying attention to Michael Kopech's debut, too?
We had a game that day. I mean, half of us were in the clubhouse watching his start on the little iPads that we had in there. And because obviously there's no TV. We're in the minor leagues still. But, during the game, we're there watching on iPads in the clubhouse. I mean, it was pretty cool. Saw him strike out Joe Mauer, which was pretty cool.
You got the full Joe Mauer experience that night. Because then didn't he, if I remember right, didn't he do his normal, like, broken bat bloop single in there too?
Yeah, first at bat of the game. I think I threw 54 pitches in two innings, and I think I threw like 46 of them to Joe Mauer.
Yeah. At least you don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah.
Reminder, if anyone has any questions for these guys, you can come up here to the mic as well at any point. Zach, to you, I have a question for you because Rick Hahn yesterday was talking about how much better defensively you got last season. How big of a focus was that for you, and where do you feel like you are on that side of your game?
It was obviously one of my biggest focuses of the year. I was fortunate enough to have a couple coaches down there who helped me out a lot in Birmingham. Obviously, everybody knows that I have the potential to hit, and the bat will always kind of be there, but I take pride in defense also. I learned a lot through stats and TrackMan, all that new game stuff, calling games, stuff like that. It was pretty fun.
Before we get to the questions, Daryl, I just want to get some rewind back to
1981.
81, 84, more like. Ozzie Guillen in the clubhouse welcoming you. Can you kind of relay some stories there? Maybe Kenny Williams, too, if we can get into that?
You mean when I first showed up?
Yeah.
Well, I was a year ahead of both Ozzie and Kenny. I got there in 84. Rudy Law was the everyday center fielder, and he twisted his ankle and he went on the disabled list. So, you know, I got the call. And a year later, we traded for Ozzie Guillen. And Kenny came up. So, yeah, and Ozzie was a handful back then. So, still.
So, this basically the same, you're saying?
He ain't changed a bit.
Michael, who welcomed you the most on the team right now coming in? Who kind of took you under his wing?
So, I got to actually pick my own locker. And just because Shields had been a guy that kind of took me under his wing all spring training, I picked the locker right next to him. And, that was kind of a mistake because he likes to talk. But, he was great. You know, me and him built a relationship. He gave me advice the couple weeks I was up there. And, you know, he was the first guy. He picked me up from the hotel, brought me to the field to play catch and everything. So, you know, it was a really cool experience for me.
Let's take some questions here from the audience. Just give your name, maybe where you're from, and who the question is directed to.
Hi, Dom from Chicago. My question's for Michael. Last year, at the beginning of the year, I feel like your numbers were down a little bit. You were struggling with command and control. You had a lot of walks, and then just something clicked where you started taking a little velocity off, and your command really improved, and you just really took off from there and just dominated the rest of the season. I was just wondering, like, what necessitated that change, or was there a certain event that caused that? Do you kind of rethink the way you were going about things?
There were a few things. I was overthrowing at the beginning of the year, and I was very anxious to get to the big leagues, and that kind of self-diagnosed anxiety that I was going through led to me getting the yips, and not many people actually knew that. But I came back from that after dealing with it for about a month and just kind of rewired the whole way I pitched. I went on a run where I didn't walk anybody for, I think it was like 30-something innings. It was the longest stretch of my career by far. But I got settled in, and then, I got the call after that. But it was really just me trying to get to the right place mentally more than physically.
Thank you.
Yeah, man.
And I think that's, like, from my seat at least, the toughest part about being a baseball player. You guys have to do this every single day for an everyday player, handle failure, and then you have to wait between starts and just have your mind right to go out there and do it again. I mean, I'm just curious the process of how you have gotten yourself to, you know, be able to handle the ups and downs, the 0-for-4s, the 4-for-4s, all of it.
I mean, it's been tough for me. I've always grown up. I've pretty much played baseball year-round because I'm from Miami, but I'd never played baseball every single day where it meant so much every single day. And obviously, I kind of take pride in stats, and I mean, we try not to pay attention to them, but in reality, that's what people like. So you go 2-3 games, 0-for-4, 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 and you're like, oh my God, what's happening? Got to change something. But no, I mean, you just got to continue to work hard and stick to the process, and that's what I'm kind of learning now.
Michael, when you're going through stuff like that, you use the word yips. How much, just because we have a catcher, we have kind of a battery going here right here, how much do you rely on your catchers when that kind of stuff's happening?
I know for me at the time, we had a few different catchers, you know, rotating in Charlotte, but I kind of put all of my faith in the catcher. I mean, I was trying to do as little thinking as possible because obviously thinking wasn't working. So, I just rely on whatever my catcher put down to call. I kind of went with the game and eventually kind of broke out of it.
And Daryl, from your standpoint right now as a coach, and you see guys who you can probably see it on their face that they're going through something, how do you try to support them?
Basically, you just try to lift them up every day. I mean, it's a grind. I remember we had Jacob May up here a couple years ago, and he went through a 1-for-30 start, and just to try to get him mentally right and ready for his next game was a grind. And you know, he got through it, and unfortunately we sent him down, and he hasn't been back yet, but it's a grind.
When that guy who's struggling gets a knock and he's...
Oh, everybody's happy for him, man. We was happy to get that thing off his back.
Let's take another question.
Hi, I'm Dylan. I'm one of the rare Northside White Sox fans. My question's kind of for all three of you. With Zach being a first-round pick out of college and Michael and Daryl being out of high school, how would you say those experiences were different coming into your first time in the minor leagues?
I'm a little bit smarter.
You're a lot smarter.
No, I mean, I would say it's a little bit different. Guys mature earlier and are kind of ready to go to pro ball right out of high school. I really wasn't. I enjoyed my time in college, got to go to the World Series, got those experiences, and got to play at home, my hometown and stuff. So that was definitely an awesome experience for me. But I would say, I mean, there's no difference. Once you get in the minor leagues, everyone's battling against each other, and it's a grind, like they said.
How do you guys handle the I'm sorry, you should answer that question too, Michael. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I know for me personally, I did most of my growing in the minor leagues. I mean, from 18 to now, I feel like most of my maturing came in the minor leagues, and that had a lot to do with traveling. I think travel matures a lot of young players. But bus rides, 10, 12 hours, getting to know all your teammates, not really having any other life other than your career. I think, you know, you kind of have to mature. You're out on your own at a very young age. You kind of have to figure things out.
Well, the minor leagues is pretty much our college. And yeah, like you said, we did our growing up in the minor leagues. I was 18, first time away from home, missing your mom and dad every day. That it was a little tough. It was a little tough. So that was like our college. We grew up there.
I was going to ask you guys, as you guys both, I remember, did interviews at some point. I remember listening to them last season where you talked about your goals and your expectations. And I think you both were very vocal. Like, I expect to go to the major leagues this year. Obviously, it happened for one of you. Zach, you'll get there eventually. How do you guys handle that? As I'm sure all these fans here sit in this room, you got media like us asking the questions. When are you coming up? When do you think you're going to come up? We all know you want to be there. That's the whole point of this thing. But how do you handle that throughout the course of a minor league season when you don't really know when that call is going to come?
I think any elite athlete kind of embraces the pressure. So it seems like you're putting a lot of pressure on a player. But, I mean, I know, speaking for me personally, I want that pressure. If I don't have that pressure on myself, then I feel like I'm doing something wrong. So when I'm vocalizing my expectations, saying I want to be, you know, a major leaguer, I think I've said in interviews with you guys before that I want to have a Hall of Fame career. I'm not just saying it to blow smoke. I'm saying it because I want to put that pressure on myself. I want to thrive for something, and I want people to know what I'm thriving for.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say pretty much the same. I mean, I'd rather have people talking about why I don't deserve to be in the big leagues or why I'm not as good as people thought than people not talking about me at all. So I take the pressure in. I love it. As my dad said, it always sucks to be good because people expect stuff from you. So it is what it is, and we'll just keep getting better.
So, Zach, what do you think is what are you focusing on right now as you embark on another season here in a few weeks to get to that point where you do get the call?
I think what they're looking for is a lot of leadership and being able to run a pitching staff. We obviously have a lot of big arms in the minor leagues, and obviously now a couple in the big leagues, and they need a guy who's going to be able to run a pitching staff and lead them. And I worked on that a lot last year, and I think I kind of proved that I've gotten a lot better at that. So I'm going to show that in spring training now.
What's your strategy going to be with a veteran who's been out there and looks at you like, what do you know?
I mean, it doesn't matter if they're 35 or 23. I mean, when we're on the field, we're one. So if you don't want to listen to me, then take it back to the dugout.
But it's got to be pretty cool. I mean, you're going to be coming up with a lot of these younger pitchers that you work with at the minor league level. I mean, how much do you think that's going to help?
I mean, I think it's going to help a lot. I think that's part of the reason why I stayed in Birmingham last year for the second half. We got a lot of big arms from Winston-Salem. And Dylan Cease, Jimmy Lambert, Bernardo Flores, all these guys in big league camp this year. So being able to work with them before hopefully we all move up will definitely help.
Let's go back to the audience. Who is next?
I'm Jennifer out in Bloomingdale. I have a question for Michael. So I was at Kopech Day at the park for your debut, which, like we said, it was electric. Everyone was on their feet for every pitch. Did you use that energy to fuel you, or did you have to block it out to get what you had to do done?
I think I had to block it out, or I would have been trying to throw like 150 miles an hour. But that being said, it's impossible to block that out. I mean, it was a crazy amount of energy, nothing I've ever experienced before. Even when I was in the bullpen, there was people cheering every time I threw a pitch. And mm-hmm. You know, I think really, though, that helped me being in the bullpen and so many people down there. I think I threw every spiked fastball I could in the bullpen before I went into the game, which, sorry about that to my bullpen catcher, but it was really cool, and I did get to feed off of that energy, and I think the whole team kind of did that. It was really cool experience for all of us.
This is for Michael and Daryl here. You'd start to actually get to live the life of being a Major League Baseball player. You're staying in the best hotels. You're flying first class. Everybody wants to talk to you. They think you're, you know, godlike. How do you maintain that I'm just a guy, and also, like, not let that go to your head that you feel invincible, that can get you in trouble?
I think it's your upbringing. You know, it starts at home. I'm a people person, so I feel like I can get along with everybody. But in today's world, with the social media and the Twitters and the Instagrams, is so much trouble you can get into. So I can only imagine what it would have been like in the 80s, man. Good Lord. Good Lord.
So, Michael, since you just went through it, the perks of getting to the major leagues and everything that comes with it, traveling, everything, you know, the luxurious lifestyle, let's put it that way. does it help everything, you know, that you're going through, or does it actually make it harder?
No, it helps. Okay. And I mean, I went from, I think, a 8-hour bus ride the week before I got called up to a first class flight to New York. I mean, it doesn't really get much better than that. It takes all the pressure off of, you know, having to wake up at 4 a.m. for a 6 a.m. flight or whatever the case may be. I mean, you're in a routine at that point. You have things figured out. You know, you just don't break your routine. I think that's the main thing at any level is having a routine.
Zach, you still got heart and grit to, right?
Yeah, I'm a grinder. Black jerseys are grinders only.
Let's take another question.
Hi, I'm Neil from Chicago. My question is for Zach and Michael. Up till now, you guys have been moving up, in the minors. My question is, what has been the best game for each of you up to this point?
I'd say one of my best games would have to be this past year. I was struggling a little bit. We're in Montgomery. We end up kind of taking a big lead going into the late innings. And I think I was like 1-for-3 at the time, just an average game. Going to the ninth inning, and I hit 2 home runs in the ninth inning. That was pretty cool. That kind of brought me up a lot, and it was a cool experience.
Probably my MLB debut, but besides that, I'm assuming. And so I said I was going through the yips and everything. Actually, the first game I came back and started doing well. I'll go back a little bit. My worst game I pitched in my entire life. My dad was there for it. He's over there. I had 8 walks in 2 innings. It was ugly.
That was against us, right?
No, that was...
Oh, that was another one.
Yeah, that was a bad one, too. Thanks for bringing that up. I had a rough one. Anyway, my dad looks at me before he goes home because he has to catch a flight to get back home, and he goes, I'm going to paraphrase because I can't say what he actually said, but he said he wanted me to get back to the way I used to pitch. The next game, I had one of the best games of my career. I went 6 innings, I think 1 hit, 10 strikeouts, and I've had a similar line to that before, but that game in particular, just because it was kind of my dad uplifting me, I think meant a lot more to me. So that game was probably my most memorable game in the minor leagues.
Can we go favorite cuisine in the minors? Are we talking Waffle House? We go in McDonald's?
I was wondering, what's the best road trip in the minor leagues?
Is there a best road trip?
We all love 8-hour bus rides.
Yeah, so I know.
Anywhere with Golden Corral.
Golden Corral.
Golden Corral was great. I mean, Golden Corral was like the big leagues. I've pretty much been anywhere. I mean, like I said, I didn't really get to go through the rookie ball places like Michael, but maybe he could speak for that.
Honestly, rookie ball probably had the best food. We had kitchen staff every day. I don't know if I could tell you a best road trip or a best place to eat, because I don't like Waffle House. I don't like any of those places, but that was always what was around. So
that's how you get a lot pack. Of it. That's how you get a 6-pack?
No.
All right, Darryl, what's the best major league road trip? I know a lot of guys say Chicago, but since
we're here full time, Chicago in the summertime, there's no better city.
No, I know there's a lot of major leaguers that that's part of the reason why sometimes they sign here is because they just love visiting Chicago. But so taking that out of the equation, what's the best major league road trip?
I like New York. I enjoy the whole Times Square thing, the new Yankee Stadium. But I also enjoy like going to the National League ballparks that we don't get to see very often. A trip into St. Louis last year was very nice. Pittsburgh, so I enjoy some of the new National League stuff too.
Is that New York pizza or Chicago pizza?
Chicago. Chicago.
Let's take another question up front here.
Hi, Kim from Chicago. This is a question for Zach. So at one of the earlier sessions, Dylan Cease said you're the biggest prankster on the team. So if you can share it with us, what's the prank that you're most proud of?
Oh, my God. I mean, we do a lot of inappropriate pranks. But
keep it PG, please.
Yeah. I mean, just we try not to hurt anyone, but a lot of stuff with, like, soap on the floor before you get in the showers. Watch people just eat it on the floor. That's fun. Maybe not with Dylan, but someone else. No, I mean, there's just too many inappropriate ones. Maybe you can come up with something
another
different.
Another time.
Yeah, yeah.
He can't keep it PG if he's never done a PG prank.
Exactly. Yeah.
Daryl, would you say pranks have evolved over time, or are they just kind of borrowing from your era?
No, back then they used to do the hot foot. They would burn your shoelaces. We had Mark Hill. He was the big prankster. It was with some good ones with the Mets too, and like you said, I can't detail all those. I had some bad.
Yeah, I guess a PG one. We've put like Icy Hot or Tiger Bomb, something like that, on the inside of someone's hat. So when they put it on, their forehead's burning for about 3 hours. that's a good one.
It's pretty good.
So I have one for Michael, one for Zach. Zach, quick question, just. When you're out in Single Eye last year, how difficult do you try to comprehend, like, if a runner's on first and third, like, they're trying to trick you, one's going to go, one might run the other way? What's the toughest part of your job defensively?
I would say the toughest part of my job defensively is dealing with some of the pitchers that are on the mound. Some of them don't speak English, which is not easy. But we have plays that we can run to try to stop the craziness that goes on. But, I mean, the toughest part, yeah, is definitely getting with those Latin guys who don't know anything, don't even know how to say hi in English, and working with them. That's tough.
So you seem like a, you know, fairly soft-spoken, as you mentioned, intelligent a couple times, young man here. When somebody is... disagreeing with your philosophy, you kind of hit on that earlier, but do you have a playbook that you go to?
I wouldn't say I'm soft-spoken. I mean, maybe I'm a little bit different on stage because I'm not used to this, but I'm not afraid to get on someone. Yeah. I mean, I don't enjoy yelling or fighting with somebody, but if I have to, then it is what it is. We're all men, and we play 150 games a year, so it happens.
You like having a guy like that, Michael, who's willing to go there?
He's not going to talk to me that way.
Yeah.
No, but realistically, it is good to have a catcher that is going to be a leader. I mean, as a pitcher, you want to, you know, obviously put the momentum going for your team to win a ball game, but that does start with the battery, and having a catcher that steps up and is a leader helps out.
So, Zach, on that topic, there's a catcher in this that, you know, well-known in this organization named A.J. Pierzynski. So being a catching prospect coming up for the White Sox, how often are you told stories of some of the shenanigans that A.J. pulled? And because that's sort of the same exact topic, you know, a fiery guy behind the plate there.
I don't know if I'm that fiery. I mean, I was just told by a lady downstairs that nobody will be able to replace AJ. So I told her, we'll see.
And then, Michael, just a quick question. I have a friend from high school. He's trying to go pro. He just sustained the same injury as you. Without going into too much of details, like, what would you recommend, like, from a mental perspective for him to approach said injury? I know it's still fresh, but just, yeah.
You mean like going through it? What would he?
Just like, yeah, mentally.
Yeah. I think for me, the best thing I did was get as far away from the game as possible. And that for me personally, that was the hardest thing to do because baseball is what I'm most passionate about. So
is he.
Yeah, so I mean, big thing for me was I would take a book, and I was fortunate this offseason to be by a beach. I mean, not everybody has that, but I would take a book and I would walk, you know, 2 miles down the beach. I would sit down and I would read for an hour. And I'm not saying that's exactly what he needs to do, but it distracted me enough. And, you know, I felt like I was getting something out of reading that, you know, I got away from worrying about my arm.
Last question. Who's your favorite author? I'm an English lit minor, so.
Oh, okay. So you're putting the pressure on me.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if he's my favorite author, but he's my favorite motivator in general. It's probably Jocko Willink. He's a little intense for some people, but.
Thanks.
Have you looked out into the season and just knowing you're not going to be playing, like strategizing when in June you're kind of losing your mind, not being able to do what you love to do, what you've worked so hard to do?
Yeah. I mean, it's going to go one of two ways. It's either going to be I'm going to turn the TV on, I'm going to be the biggest cheerleader there is every game, or I'm going to unsubscribe from MLB Network and never watch another game of baseball until I'm back. But I've thought about it quite a bit, and you know, obviously I'm not going to be able to hide from the game. A big part of what I'm doing right now is trying to get back to playing, so I'm just going to embrace the time off, use it to my advantage, you know, miles off my arm, and just, you know, do what I can for the team when I have that opportunity.
Coach, any tips? Or
no, our future looks good with these two kids up here, huh?
No doubt.
A lot of people say that once you get Tommy John, if you rehab correctly, you end up coming back throwing harder. So, well, any of you guys know how hard he threw before? We'll see.
Go ahead.
This is a question for all three of you. Does your number mean anything to you?
That's a good question.
Well, my number's 8, and he's wearing it over there. And,
so the real question is, how much is it worth?
That's right. Yeah. I'm willing to part ways with it. It's going to cost you a TV.
I'll buy a TV. No, I mean, I grew up wearing 8 my whole life. In college, I got to college, and somebody else would wear an 8, so I decided to go 0. Now, 0 meant a lot to me, so I wanted to be 0 in pro ball. Kenny Williams told me it's not a real number, so I can't wear that. every number that I've tried to wear has been shot down. So,
no, this one still this you got a shot.
Available?
Yeah. You got a shot.
All right, cool.
I mean, I know for me, I grew up wearing number 5. You're not going to see many pitchers wearing 5. So I looked at my idols to see who I wanted to emulate, and Nolan Ryan was that guy for me. So that's why I wear 34. But, I mean, a lot of people wear 34. To me, it's an important number. I have it tattooed on my wrist. I have it around my neck. But it's a number at the end of the day. You know, if I pitch in 99 or if I pitch in negative 10 or whatever the number is, it's just a number on my back as long as I can help the team win.
Well, you put it out there that you want to be in the Hall of Fame, and there's a pretty famous 34 retired on the football team that plays in town, so it would be pretty cool to have that 34 raised on the south side, right?
I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, that number means a lot in this city.
Hi, Ian from Romeoville. I was going to ask Coach, you've been around the game for a long time. I was curious what your favorite ballpark was to visit and still today.
Well, like I said, I like the new Yankee Stadium. Is they top class. They first class in everything they do up there. But like I said, I enjoyed the National League ballparks this year. St. Louis have done a phenomenal job there.
What's the number one place you want to go to? Zach, Michael?
I'd love to play in Miami. I was fortunate enough to play in the Futures game last year in Miami, but there's nothing like a big league game at your hometown stadium, so Miami.
I heard they're building a new ballpark in Arlington. So I would like to play in the current one before they tear that down, because that's where I grew up watching ball games. So that would be a really cool experience for me.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, my name is Wayne. This question is for Daryl. I just wanted to see if you could elaborate a little bit on the whole blowing the whistle thing and Josh Donaldson last year. Because it was kind of entertaining, you know, Josh Donaldson was pointing to his lips and pointing to you, and then you know, how that all evolved, and then if you're still doing it, or did someone tell you to discourage it, or how did that all go?
Well, I had to whistle because I cannot whistle. Whee, whee. So I decided to go to get me a whistle, and I need to position the outfitters. It's basically for me to get the outfitters' attention. You know, I hit it one time, and Parker needs to be looking at me, or Engel, he needs to be looking at me when they hit that whistle. Well, Todd Stevenson used to work with the A's, and Josh Donaldson was one of his students. And he told Stevenson that if that Boston blows that whistle, I'm going to kick his ass. I said, he said, what? So he was on the on-deck circuit. I went, beep, and I was looking right at him. And we was, I think it was a, I know Lopez was pitching. It was like a 1-0 game or 2-1 game. And, you know, we got him out the first couple times. And he had been struggling. You know, his shoulder was bothering him. He wasn't hitting. And we got him down 0-2. He fought back in the count. Then he hit an opposite home field home run to tie it up. And I was like, oh, Lord, Lord, Lord. And as soon as he hit home plate, he went, beep, 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 beep. I said, okay, you got it.
See that? But that's like, that's fun, right? Do you guys enjoy? Because sometimes there's the old school baseball thought, any talking, and we got to have a fight. But then there's the new school where you can do a little bit of that.
Yeah, I mean, and it was all in good fun. It was, you know, it was no harm. You know, I didn't feel bad about it. He and we talked about it the next day, and they banned it from me later in the season. One of the umpires, I must have scared him or something when I blew the whistle, and he come in there, and oh, no more whistle, no more whistle. And Joe Torre came down on me and put the whistle away.
What does that look like, by the way, for you, Michael, as far as protecting a teammate when you're on the mound if guys are not playing the game the right way?
This is a tough question for me to answer because guys that have played with me know that I'm not afraid to hit somebody.
Or against him. I played against him once.
Yeah. But I'm willing to do what it takes to protect my teammate. So if that's putting one in your ribs, then just know you're going to suffer the consequences. I don't know how else to put it. Yeah, you're protecting your teammates, and that's just what it is.
But I think a lot of teammates respect that. But what I've always wondered is, how do you figure out the right time and place? I mean, how do you decipher when that's necessary? And obviously, I mean, guys get hit. It's not always, you know, a problem. But there are other times where you have to make a statement.
I can tell you, I've found out the hard way the wrong time to do it. Happened in the minor leagues a few times. But you know, usually, as a pitcher, you should wait on the call to come from your manager. And I've taken it upon myself a few times, and that was the wrong thing to do. But, you know, if you talk it over with your manager, your pitching coach, whatever the case may be, they know what the situation is. They know what's going on. They'll tell you when the right time to do it is.
Well, I can tell you, beyond just, you know, beanball or whatever you call that, I, as a baseball fan, love seeing like stuff like that where you're having fun with the whistle and opponent. I mean, anything that can make the game more entertaining sometimes, and some trash talk every once in a while. I mean, it's okay to have that in baseball. It doesn't have to be just in other sports. So I know that's always a big conversation, it seems like, in baseball, between what's old school, what's new school, what's allowed. But I don't know. In my opinion, I like that kind of stuff.
How's your bat flip?
I'm not a big bat flip guy. I'm traditional, you know, just hit the ball and run around the bases. But I do have something to say about that. I was fortunate enough to go to Dominican last week. I went to a winter ball playoff game. If any of you get the chance to do that, you have to. It is a different culture. You'll understand why they bat flip. A lot of Latins like to be flashy and everything like that, and I saw why. I mean, it's just one big party over there. When you see a guy hit a single with nobody on and two outs, and the whole place is absolutely going crazy, they're almost running on the field. I mean, it's kind of cool, but yeah, it was a really good experience.
I mean, you guys as players got to like that. I've been to a game in Puerto Rico, and it was more like being at a soccer game compared to a baseball game. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, this is great. I mean, how do we get this going in the major leagues all the time?
Yeah, I mean, I'm all about bat flips. I'm all about bringing energy to the game, but sometimes they get a little disrespectful. That's when you see pitchers thrown at guys, and then there's very fine lines to that. So, I mean, look, if someone bat flips and you don't like it, hit that guy. Don't hit me because he bat flipped. You know, like, I mean, I'm about it, but whatever.
I will say, if someone hits just a bomb off of me and they flip their bat, you deserve it. You know, I shouldn't have thrown that pitch. That's my fault. Show me up. Go ahead. But on the other hand, if it's a situation where, you know, you hit a little fence scraper and you're flipping your bat and it's a situation where, you know, we've been competing for a little bit, just get around the bases.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, if you're throwing a slider to the outside, it's a good pitch and he just pokes it out there and it somehow, you know, goes around pesky pole. Come on. Yeah. That's not a bad flip situation. I know we're tight on time, so let's sneak in a few more questions here.
Hi, I'm Carl from Winfield. My question for Zach. I grew up as a catcher. Now I'm an umpire because I realized I wasn't good enough to make pro ball. So my question is, what's your style and how much do you interact with umpires when you're behind the plate?
I'm a big talker when it comes to the game. I mean, we play a lot of games, so I try to make it interesting. I try to be friendly with guys and get to know them on a first-name basis. But sometimes when I get up to bat and they're calling some pitches that are not going my way, then the talk goes around the other way. But, no, I mean, I like to be friendly with a lot of umpires and even the players. I mean, we're competing at the same time. I mean, I'm going to say hi to a guy when he comes up to bat. After that, I'm trying to get you out. I mean, it is what it is.
I've always wondered about that from a pitcher standpoint. If you're a catcher is complaining when he's at the plate to the umpire about balls and strikes, don't you want to tell him to keep his mouth shut because he might cost you a couple pitches here and there?
I just want him to apologize when he goes back. You know, get your words out. You know, say what you need to say. When you go back there, just, you know, say, I'm sorry. Let's get back to it.
Yeah, a lot of times when I complain about being a strike call when I'm up to bat or something, it's mostly like, why didn't I get that strike call when I was catching? Hey, why'd you call that on me? You just ruined my at-bat. You know, it's more of like, hey, if you're going to call it against me, give it to my pitcher at the same time. So,
do you find that helps?
With some guys.
Yeah.
Some of them take it to heart. I mean, a lot of umpires nowadays, they think that they can't have a conversation with you. I mean, we're all the same guys. We're just trying to – it's a game. So, obviously, we're competing. We're trying to get every call we can. So, I mean, sometimes the right words don't really come out, but we have the right idea.
Any advice on this, Daryl?
No, I have nothing.
Use your mic.
We have time for one more, or should we wrap? One more? Okay.
Hi, Mike from Crown Point. My question is for all three of you. Michael, I've read about your dad, how he coached you when you were younger quite a bit. So my question is for all three. If your dad's coached you and how far they coach you up, and if that continued once you're in pro ball, if they still work with you, if you really go with the coaching staff, or if they're working with you still in the off season.
Yeah, I mean, my dad has coached me since I was 2.5 years old. He coached me all the way up through about ninth grade-ish, getting into high school when it started getting serious with other coaches. But I mean, we went out to the cage every single day, and he was always the guy to throw to me. Even to this day, when I'm playing away in the minors, seems like every time I'm struggling, when he comes out, we have a little batting practice session. I mean, the White Sox have been good about that, even though we have coaches that we're working on stuff. But it seems like I just snap right back into it and start raking again. I mean, I remember last year I was struggling big time in April. He comes up, he throws to me the first game, I hit 2 home runs. It's like, I'm like, can you just stay here? I mean, can the White Sox hire him? But, yeah, I mean, that's about it.
Yeah, so I worked with my dad up until about the same time, until I was probably 14 or 15, about ninth grade. And it got to the point where there was only so much me and him could do together. I mean, we both read about the game, and that's kind of how we both learn. But I think I gave him one too many broken toes throwing bullpens to him. So, you know, he kind of had to hang that up. But we do talk about the game a lot still. And, you know, that's kind of how he coaches me. Is he talks about what he sees, and I talk about what I feel, and he tells me I'm wrong. And no.
Well, thanks, guys. Appreciate the time. And some great questions out there.
Great job, everybody.
Everybody enjoy the rest of Sox Fest.